Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. And now here is Stephen Stone.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome into our Straight Talk for this Thursday. First Straight Talk of the new year 2020. Manny Kimmel will be back tomorrow. And, of course, our broadcast comes to you live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road across from Winthrop University. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders. Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy with us today. Your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care, piedmontmedicalcenter.com. And as always, our streaming provided by highspeedweb.net, 365 days a year. You'll find us right there on that free app, the WRHI radio app. John Miscelli is with us today. And of course, we know John real well at Broadcast House. He's a neighbor and all-around good guy, but and something I didn't know about him was he's an author. But John and I got to know each other one Saturday morning as I was leaving Broadcast House and made my left-hand turn onto Main Street, and John was headed home from somewhere, and we both saw an American flag on a pole in front of a building that was upside down, signaling distress, and we knew better than that, and we both stopped at the same time, chatted, and fixed the flag, and went about our happy way there, and see each other in passing all the time. But I didn't know that you were a noted author, my friend.
I don't know about noted, but I guess I'm an author.
Well, you will be by the time we're done with you today here on Straight Talk.
Great news.
John has written a book entitled A Long and Bloody Year. It's about the Revolutionary War, and it centers on the year 1780. And you really, now you, of course, are a reenactor also, Revolutionary War reenactor here in York County. So you know these places, I guess it's safe to say, like the back of your hand.
I do, and I've researched it, and I've been to every battlefield in the county and in the whole area. And I've actually pretty much had reenactments in each of those areas that I talk about in the book.
Well, let's get into the book just a little bit. And I've just started it, so I'm maybe a quarter of the way into it, okay? And it's a great book. It's only like, it's less than 100 pages, but it's a very brisk read, which was the first thing that struck me about it. You know, it's a page-turner.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's short, but, you know, and I do flesh out the main characters a bit. But with my experience as a reenactor, I took the history of this area, and I interposed all the life experiences I had as a reenactor into the story. And so it didn't take that long to tell the story, because they weren't doing anything but fighting and fleeing and going home on occasional times when it was safe to be home.
Well, you talk about familiar characters also, both locally and I guess nationally, because there is mention of George Washington in there. There is mention of Bannister Tarleton from Great Britain, Bloody Ban, as he was known as, and was depicted in the Mel Gibson movie The Patriot as the nasty guy played by the great Robert Isaacs, who's such a nice fellow in real life, and said, "You're not going to like me in this movie." And as it turned out, he was right. We didn't. Yeah. But also, you make reference to Colonel Bratton and a number of other, you know, noteworthy local heroes, if you will.
That's right. And there was plenty of them around here. You know, Colonel Hill had the ironworks out on Highway 274 right after you cross Allison Creek, is where all his land was and where the grist mills and his house and his whole enterprise that he had in. A lot of very prominent people were involved in this area.
One of the interesting things I've found so far in my short read into your book, John, is that when you mention a landmark site, you actually give its present-day address so that the reader, if he's so inclined, and I'll already tell you I am, can actually, you know, pop that little address into my GPS and go there and have a look around. In the case you mentioned the hill plant, well, you know, the ironworks there.
Right. And I thought that was important for people, especially around here, when they were to read it, that they could do that very thing. They could go to that very address and or somewhere nearby there and be able to see what the exact area where all this happened.
Yeah. I know a number of folks go out to Cowpens there to walk that battlefield, and they, of course, also film some of the movie out there as well as historic Bradensville, which was, every time I go to historic Bradensville, I absolutely love it. They had to be thrilled by this book and the prominent mentioning and of such.
They have been, and come to say that they are going to be selling my books here pretty soon. So I'm going through the vetting process now where the county historian's reading it and making sure everything's right. And then it's going to be on the shelves at Historic Bradensville and at other museum locations.
It is quite a task to sit down and write a book. I mean, how do you begin and, you know, and where, you know, how did you choose 1780? I mean, because there was some pretty bloody years in that war prior to that, and, of course, for a short period of time after that as well.
Well, 1780 was a long and bloody year. It truly was, because that's when everything happened here.
Right.
It was when Abraham Buford and his Virginia regiment were cut up over in the Waxhaws by Master Tarleton. And the Scotch-Irish Presbyterians who were here, the majority of the people were Scotch-Irish Presbyterians, wanted to be left alone. That's why they left Northern Ireland, because of the outreach of the British getting into their lives so much. So when it came so close to them over in the Waxhaws, they knew that they needed to get involved and fight for the freedom.
Fake news is not something that is necessarily new to this time and era. It existed way back in the day. In the opening pages of the book, it talks about the meeting that was held, okay, and an announcement that was made saying, "Up, going home, you know, it's you know, we'll give you clemency," or, you know, and all this other stuff. And Washington, you know, he's folded up his tents and he's moved on back north and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's a useless struggle and no need for any of this. And had everybody scratching their heads. And finally, somebody spoke up and said, "Hey, this ain't right. It's fake news."
That's exactly right. And we were to give, and I said we, okay, but the Patriots here were to give their paroles to not take arms
right
up against the British and the Loyalists. And they weren't going to have any of that, because they knew from prior experience in Northern Ireland that they weren't going to do that.
No, and a number of them came here to flee the oppression that was Great Britain at the time. And in your book, there is one character whose name escapes me who says, "No, wait a minute. I came here to get away from this. I'm not going to have it here."
Right, right. That's correct.
Paraphrasing, of course.
That's how they all felt here. They were a close-knit community. They were family. They were going to stand up for each other, and they were going to fight to protect what they had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people down in the lowlands, down around Charlestown and all that, when all these settlers were coming in, and they weren't coming in mainly from Charlestown. They were coming in down through Philadelphia from the Great Wagon Road. So my family has been here in this county since 1766, and we came down from Philadelphia, traveled all that distance down through here, so all down through the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia and into North Carolina. All those areas were already filled up with immigrants until they crossed the Catawba and came here into York County, which at that time was still North Carolina. So it was 1776 before the they finally straightened the state lines out, and it became part of the new acquisition district,
right, exactly,
of South Carolina. So they were a buffer between the Cherokee and the people down in Charlestown.
Right.
So if you look at Colonel Bratton's house, you go stand out at the fence at the front of it and look up at the house. On the second floor, there's windows that are only about a foot tall and 3 foot long. Well, that's kind of an odd size for a window.
It is.
They're gun ports.
Okay.
Okay? Because the Cherokee made raids down here. So they had to protect themselves from the Cherokee. And then, of course, when the war broke out around here, if you were a fighting age and you got caught at home by the British or the Loyalists, you had two choices. You join them then, or they hung you. There was no, "I'm not a partisan in this. I don't want any part
no,
of this."
No conscientious objectors, huh?
You had to choose a side. So a lot of times when they came home, they would have to live out in the woods behind their house because of fear of getting caught. And I cover that in the book, too.
You did. You made mention there's a gentleman who's getting ready to go join the troop there at the Hill Ironworks. And his wife very upset because his two sons want to go along, and you know, she's against that. And of course, they're young; they're only 14 and 15. But at that time, you were basically considered a man. You were old enough to hold a gun. You were in, and I just remember in the book, and it really struck me that I read it twice, that particular page where he just simply looked at him and said, "Mount up."
That's right. And that was the captain of the militia. Just his wife didn't want the children to go. Well, they had to go. And during Huck's defeat, which happened here in July of 1780, the Loyalists and the British, well, there was only like, well, there actually wasn't any British there. They were all Loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
But they stopped at a house and they caught a couple elderly men casting round ball out of pewter. And they were drug along to the colonel's house and then later to the Williamson house, where they were going to be hung the next morning. So that's how bad it was, you know. They were using their own dinnerware to make musket balls and rifle balls. And they couldn't even stay at home and feel safe. So thank God Colonel Bratton and Colonel Hill and the rest of the Patriot militia showed up that next morning and pretty much wiped out that whole band of Loyalists.
And you know, it's interesting because the research that obviously goes into this, it's one thing, I think, as a reenactor, you pretty much have a basic, you know, thing of the history and that sort of thing to do the performances that you all do. And I'm always intrigued by them and how authentic it is. Again, going back to Brattonsville, if you've ever been, and I know you have, to the Candlelight Christmas tours, the people that are in periodic costume and that sort of thing, right down to the language, I mean, it's like you stepped through a time machine.
That's right.
Back to an era of long ago, centuries ago, in fact, that is very lifelike and realistic. How long did it take you to do all this research, though? Because you really get into the, you know, the inner detail, and I mean, it's almost as if through your writing here, and again, it's a brisk read, you begin to feel transported.
Actually, I started this in longhand in 1999, and it got, you know, I didn't have a computer then, and I had a whole, you know, I had 3 inches worth of paper that I had written this on. So it finally got transcribed into, you know, digital form, and I had to get a computer and learn how to type and do all that. So I put it up for years and years, and then I'd bring it back out and look at it, and I'd add some to it. And then I was going to stop it at this particular point, and I decided, no, I needed to go through the whole year. So it took me, you know, it took me a long time to get it finished, but then as my interest ebbed and flowed, you know, finally I decided I just need to get this done and get it out and let people read it.
You brought with you a very good review from a writer from a Muzzleloader magazine, I think it's called, and I may not have gotten that exactly right, but very favorable. And he himself is you know, an author and talks about, you know, self-publishing and that sort of thing. That's not an easy task.
No, it's not. As a matter of fact, trying to get your book published by a publisher is ridiculous. I mean, they want a ton of money. And then they don't give you but a short supply. I think it was one of them was 50 books that I would get to be able to hand out and sell. And it was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars. And, you know, I found a publisher over near Spartanburg, and they did a fabulous job. And Barry Grant, who's a very dear friend of mine, works downtown. He built the book for me, and then I had lots of people read it. And because, you know, looking at it as much as I did, every time that I would read the manuscript, I was reading out of my mind instead of what was on the paper in front of me.
Okay.
So I believe it turned out pretty good, and I'm pretty happy with it, and I'm pretty proud of it.
As you should be. Do you find that you're hypercritical in reading your own printed words, so to speak? I mean, as opposed to, well, someone like me says, oh, yeah, I know John, we've met, he's a good fella, and, you know, that sort of thing, and oh, he's written a book, and I'm reading it, and I'm not thinking about the John that I know. You know, I'm reading the book, and I'm thinking, well, this is, you know, this is, it's a page-turner, you know?
Yeah, I don't know about hypercritical. All I know is I was scared to death to let people read my work because, you know, I'm not the brightest bulb on the tree, and and you know, when you put your work out there, you've got to be able to stand behind it, and also you know, there's going to be criticism coming your way.
Well, that's true. Everybody's an expert except for those that are actually doing it, because they're too busy doing it as you are. Will there be another book?
You know, I've had people ask me that. They get into it, and
it's the obvious question. Like I say, I'm only a quarter of the way into it, and
right.
it's a nice afternoon read. You know,
it is. But the only thing that would happen is after this book ends in early 1781, they started. They were asking for volunteers to go from horseback, which is what these guys were on all the time,
mm-hmm.
to join the infantry. To head down south around Charleston to push the British out of the state altogether.
Right.
And one of my ancestors that's listed at the front of the book actually did go down there, and he was awarded, you know, plunder from the battlefield as part of his pay. And there were some pretty big battles down that way, and I guess I could, but I just don't know that there's really enough to write about it down after... After we pushed them down into the lower part of the state, they wanted to get back to their house and their home and their plantation and their farm and their fences and their livestock. They couldn't leave. You know, they had fought the enemy and fought them off, and if need be, they would go back. But like I said, one of my ancestors did, but the other one stayed here and went about his business building a life here in York District.
It was a matter of defense.
Yes.
As not so much aggression, but just, you know, defending one's home. I mean, it's no more basic principle than that. I mean, it was basically how it all began, was a group of people defending their home, you know?
Remember, they wanted to be left alone.
Yeah.
So when they ended the question by their fighting and their tenacious fighting, and they won the battle, and they won the war, they just wanted to be left alone then. Don't bother them.
That's it.
You know, the hornet's nest up in Charlotte, the Charlotte Hornets.
Right.
You know, that's the British got into a hornet's nest when they upset the Scotch-Irish, okay? And they paid for it.
Indeed, big time. John Miskelly is with us today. We're going to take our mid-program break. You were talking about his book that he's written entitled A Long and Bloody Year. It's about 1780, the Revolutionary War. Straight Talk is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax here with Founders. By Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And we broadcast every Monday through Friday right here at Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill, across from Winthrop University, where they make fresh subs and salads right before your very eyes. And, John, if you'll read along with me, there's only one way to do it, and that is on a count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, 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 slice. Garden, 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 garden.
We'll get the congressman involved in this next time
that.
Around. Back after this.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Hey, Manning, I hear the gyros are back at Substation 2.
That's right, Alex, and they are great. They're made to order, served hot, on warm, soft pita bread with creamy tzatziki sauce, onion, and tomato. And I can't wait to get one.
Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Relax. Love your car payment with an auto loan from Founders Federal Credit Union. If you're ready to buy your new car and start making those unforgettable memories, Founders features an easy online application, flexible terms, low rates, 24-hour account access with Founders Online, and fast, friendly service. Visit relaxjoinfounders.com or one of our more than 30 offices to see if you qualify for membership. Relax. Love your car payment with Founders. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
This is Danny Rogers with Paul Davis Restoration. When you are faced with damage to your home, there is only one company you need to know, Paul Davis Restoration. Only one company with 50 years of corporate support and 20 years of local presence. Only one company with 8 trained and certified water mitigation techs on call and ready to respond to your loss 24/7, 365. There is only one company you need to know. Call Paul Davis Restoration, 803-329-1140.
Good Pharmacy, building trust for four generations.
This is pharmacist Kia Hicklin. Enjoy our spacious new modern look and take advantage of Rock Hill's original drive-thru with pickup and drop-off service.
My mom loves Good Pharmacy.
Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue, Rock Hill.
These days, everybody wants peace of mind. Some people do yoga. Some meditate. Me? I use Ready Home Security from Comporium. Ready Home lets me monitor my house, even when I'm hundreds of miles away. With Ready Home, I can use my phone or tablet to set my alarm, turn on lights, lock the doors, even control my thermostat. Yoga's great, but knowing that everything's great at home, now that's peace of mind. That's Ready Home. To learn more about Ready Home, visit Comporium.com. or call 888-403-2667.
Have a catering coming up? You can get some great ideas from Charlie Ruffalo at Substation 2.
We have giant party subs made on this beautiful Italian loaf of bread, piled high with 6 meats and cheese, and gardened with any one of our 8 delicious fresh toppings.
Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And welcome back to our Straight Talk program. Stephen Stone in for Manny Kimmel. He's back tomorrow. John Miskelly is with us today. And John is, of course, a neighbor of us here at WRHI and also an author. And we're talking about his book on the Revolutionary War entitled A Long and Bloody Year. Now, we've been teasing him for 15 minutes. How can people get this book? Because you mentioned earlier that Historic Braddonsville is going to be selling it, but that's probably some time away. What about those who want it and they want it now?
Well, what they can do is they can email me. My email address is MRMISS, Mr. Miss, at Comporium.net. And if they live here locally and I can, hand them the book, it only cost them $12. But if I have to mail it to them, it'll be
$15. That makes sense.
And it's at the Visitor Center down in Chester County off of Highway 9. It's, let's see, where it's at. It's Andrew Jackson State Park. It's going to be in all the state parks. It's going to be in all the national parks around here, Cowpens and
right.
and Kings Mountain and such. And so you'll be able to find it around in all these local places. But for sure, if you want one quick, just email me at that address, and I'll be sure to get it to you. And I'd love for you to be able to read a copy of it.
And that email address again is M, as in Mary, R, M-I-S-S, at Comporium.net.
That's right.
Mr. Miss at Comporium.net, and John will be in touch that same day, more than likely, and you're going to want this book. It's very good, and, of course, again, it's a book based on the year 1780, okay, but there's not a whole lot of fiction that I've seen so far in this, as far as, made. I mean, obviously, you have to tell a story, and therefore, it involves a certain amount of artistic license, but, you're citing actual people and actual events. Beyond that.
So what you'll notice in the book is the historical characters have their first and last name.
Right.
Whereas the characters that my reenacting friends that provide the bulk of the book
and
flesh it out.
Okay.
Those are just first names. So there's Captain Bob and there's Sergeant
right.
Joe and Joel, and these are all people that I know that have gone to all these battlefields with me. And a matter of fact, Ed Schultz, who used to be the site manager at Historic Brownsville, he's at Williamsburg now. He took us out at Cowpens one year on the exact date of the battle. It was July 17th. The battle took place in 1781, but we were there the weekend. It was the 17th, and he did the same thing the general did that morning. He got up out of camp. He yelled, "Get up, boys. Benny's coming." And Benny was Bannister Tarleton.
Right.
So he got us out. We got armed. We got dressed, everything. We walked out onto the battlefield, onto the militia line where our ancestors stood all those years ago. Spread out about 10 or 15 feet apart. It was still dark. It was cold. And I was standing there, and I'll never, ever forget this. The dew had soaked through my leather shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It was cold. I was cold. I was freezing. And we watched this. We stood there in silence, 20 guys.
Yeah.
And that's what reenacting is about, is experiencing what the actual person experienced. I remember the birds flying overhead. I remember the sun coming up. And just to know that 200 or 300 yards in my front, all those years ago, Bannister Tarleton and his staff rode up to the hill and saw that line of militia standing there. That's some neat stuff.
Yeah, that is some neat stuff. And when you talk about, the camping, we're not talking, pup tents and that sort of thing. These guys were, and you describe it in your book, they really were roughing it.
Yeah, there was no tents, no camp, no nothing like that. There was, they would just throw down on the ground. When they'd have to take care of their horse first, and they just can't camp anywhere. They had to go into the middle of the woods to get away from a possible British or Tory roving patrol. and they didn't have much of a campfire. They would cook, start a fire to cook just what they needed to cook, and then they'd throw a blanket on the ground, and that's where they'd sleep for the night.
Yeah, we're not talking Boy Scouts here in cans of soup into a nice little, I mean, you know, you were talking hardtack and bread, and you listed, again, in the book, you know, as you're leaving to join the force there at Captain Hill there at the Ironworks, where, you know, there was hardtack, dried beef, you know, yeast, bread, and that sort of thing. I mean, so it's not like these guys were eating extravagantly. They were basically eating to survive.
That's exactly what it was. And, you know, they had to feed their horses and make sure their horses were good to go, because that was their lifeline. And they learned how to fight from fighting the Cherokees. You know, the Cherokees would ride in, dismount, do what they had to do, and then leave. So it was fighting Indian style. The 18th century linear tactics, where you stand shoulder to shoulder like the Continentals and the Redcoats did, and then they would all lower their muskets at the same time and fire. No, the militia didn't do that. They didn't have muskets with bayonets on them. They had their hunting rifles from home.
And those were an assortment of weaponry, as described in your book. Some were muskets, others were shotgun, and
that
sort
exactly
of thing.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, you might have one thing, and the guy next to you might have another, and the guy next to him may have another, and yet another, and another, depending upon the situation.
That's exactly right. The guy named James Collins, that was a young lad at the Battle of Hook's Defeat, he was armed with a shotgun that day.
Mm-hmm.
He called it his little blue-barreled shotgun. And I don't know that he hit anything, and he don't know if he hit anything, but at a latter battle, when the Patriots had run off the Loyalists, and they would pick up the weapons, the captain actually gave him a very, very nice rifle, 50 caliber rifle, and the captain told James Collins, just go ahead and cast your shotgun aside and use this. You'll get better use out of it.
Yeah, and there you go. The book is called A Long and Bloody Year. It is about the year 1780 in our nation's history, when basically the war came to South Carolina. I mean, primarily, as history has taught us, it was focused up in New England and Pennsylvania and Virginia's, you know, and then it came this way. And they were more than ready for it, though, because I guess you knew in advance that it was just a matter of time, and with Charlestown being such an integral port, I mean, there was Boston, there was Charlestown, and maybe, you know, Baltimore in the middle of it there, or Philadelphia, but those were the main things, and that's exactly what the British focused on, was those main ports of entry.
Just remember that there was more battles and skirmishes in South Carolina than there was in any other colony.
Yeah.
So this was a very busy place back then.
And in a very short period of time, actually.
Yeah, that one year, that long and bloody year.
Exactly. Well, it is a fantastic read. Is there anything that I've missed in this? Because I didn't want to have you give too much of it away, because I'm reading it. But it is good, and it is a page-turner, and highly recommended. I mean, folks are going to like this book, and, of course, they can reach you directly through email, mrmiss@comporium.net. And John will get back in touch with you there and get you a copy of this book. And any chance of it becoming a major motion picture, John? I got to ask the question.
I don't know. You know, that's a great thought. That would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
That would be cool. John Miskelly, we appreciate it. The half hour flew by like I told you it would, but it's a good read. So get yours, friend. It's A Long and Bloody Year by John Miskelly. And hopefully you get it on Amazon or something soon, but they can get you directly. Again, John's email is mrmiss@comporium.net. Straight Talk comes your way, brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax. You're with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. And we broadcast live from Substation 2. Now, we rehearsed everybody. I see the congressman disappeared here. He must have got his order to go. But there's only one way to do it, and they make subs right before your eyes and salads individually. And it goes like so on three. One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Slice. Garden, 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 garden. Manning Kimmel back with you tomorrow. I'm Stephen Stone. Have a great day, won't you?